Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to something you could have never been expecting. You've stumbled upon episode 2 of Byhards. As opposed to Tryhards, when one of the Tryhards is away, it's an offshoot series called Byhards. Not well thought out, not edited, not produced, just a free-flowing, let-your-hair-down conversation between two of the Tryhards who, let's face it, were able to be here this week. That is the qualification that Brian and I bring to the table. Matt Hurley is away. Brian, let's have the reciting of the text, shall we? We were just laughing at this in the pre-show notes. Let's get it out there for everyone to let them know.
Let us do as it is done. We will have the reciting of the text, and the text is recited. Sorry, I'm a putz. We are listening to comedy show.
That was it. That was the whole text that we got from him literally hours before recording time. This is a Monday night, December 11th, for what is now an episode of Byhards. But I was reflecting on it, and you think about it, 80 weeks we've gotten together for Tryhards, and only over those 81 weeks that we run just one episode of Byhards. That was a year ago during the holiday season when you were traveling. So Matt and I got to hang out for Byhards. Brian, this is going to be your first Byhards. Yes. Are you ready for this?
As long as we don't try anything too kinky, I think I'm fine.
All right. Well, let's just get into some drinking and some magic. I think that'll settle the kink for the night. We are going to start it the way that we usually start Tryhards, and then it's going to spin off its axis from there. So, Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking something that I was drinking this weekend when I was able to play some magic and hang out with some good pals. The Abita Amber, which is a Vienna-style lager from the Abita Brewing Company. Very toasty, very good, solid, middle-of-the-road amber ale. Well, lager, I should say. And it's really good. Some of our Shark Tank group is starting to branch out from the Bud Light, Coors Light, and God forbid, you know, Milwaukee's best type of beers. And we're like, hey, I kind of like this one. You got something else for me? Kind of like this one. So I brought some beer, and these are the remnants of those, which I kind of hid so that they just wouldn't drink me out of all the good stuff.
Now, you were in charge of bringing the beer to that party, and you're going to tell that story here in a minute. I was kind of beered out. I've been drinking a lot lately, which is, I mean, a great problem to have. So I just reached into the back of the liquor cabinet, grabbed the standby bottle of Glenfiddich 12, and poured a little over my whiskey stones.
That seems a little rich for a Byhards episode, don't you think?
Well, you know, since there's no consequences to anything that we say, this is a non-canon, non-continuity episode. So if this is your Star Wars or your Star Trek, this is a non-canon episode. So no matter what we do here, the ramifications and the ripples don't extend back into the universe of Tryhards. So that's why we're just free to do whatever here this evening. MTG that we played, I was on another road trip for the other job, so I really didn't get to do anything. But I did get to think about someone who journeyed to that destination far, far to the north, at least in most players' minds. Some players have said they've never been there. Others accuse their opponent of going there on nearly every occasion that they play against them. That place is Magical Christmas Land. And it was the host of Brian's Magical Christmas Magic Party over the weekend with the Shark Tank in Galesburg. How'd it go? What'd you guys do? And was anything unfinished when it was all over?
Oh, the only thing that was unfinished was the party ended too early, in my opinion. However, we had a really, really good time. As I mentioned last week, and I think the week before, I was really looking forward to this because we had all agreed to draft Unstable at this party and kind of do a little Secret Santa gift exchange, which went off really, really well last year. Was a whole ton of fun. So again, we each got a name, kind of tailored our gifts to match that of our chosen Shark Tank member. And then we started the evening off with some Commander. I moved into some tiny leaders with some people until everybody got there. We had some food, and of course the drinks were flowing. And then we finally drafted Unstable. And it was just an absolute ball all night long.
You're still trying to keep tiny leaders alive, man. I love you. I love you for it.
Oh, hey.
Who was your tiny leader, and did you see anything super cool?
okay, here's the coolest thing I saw. My tiny leader is Jorien Ruin Diver, which I love the deck. It's really, really fun. But the thing that I saw that was so cool was I had totally forgotten that there was like an alternate full art version of Jorien Ruin Diver. So I'm playing a tiny leaders against Nash, and I can't even remember who his leader was. And he plays Jorien because he could in his color pie. And he's got this full art, like, tricked out version just as a member of his deck. And I'm like, well, that seems kind of silly. Like, why don't I have that as my commander? He's like, I don't know. Get with the times, man. So that's the next purchase on Brian's list, is getting an actual tiny leader's commander worthy of that deck. So did I see anything cool? We didn't play a ton of tiny leaders. It kind of went the way I was expecting it to be. I try to get out really, really fast, get Jorien out, start, you know, casting multiple spells a turn, drawing cards, etc., and just wasn't able to get there with Nash's big green monsters trampling all over my face. So that was basically what happened there. The commander side of things, there was some craziness going on because the Shark Tank had adopted the silver bordered card rule.
This is controversial.
Yes, controversial, and let me tell you, you can do some pretty stupid things with some silver boards, especially when I sit down next to a deck and everybody puts their commanders out, and I see Baron Von Count from Unstable. I'm like, you seriously adopted an Unstable commander? And he's like, it's really good. And it's true. It was really good. He got to destroy target player. Just destroyed from the game. Not dealing them lethal combat damage. Destroy target player. It was kind of silly.
Brian, this seems like an opportune moment for us to ask Urza Academy Headmaster, yes, what we should do. Would you like to plus one or minus one and ask Urza whether or not this should go forward?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's plus one Urza and see what Urza has to say.
Plus one. Create 2/3/1 red elemental creature tokens with haste. Exile them at the beginning of the next end step.
Okay, I can get behind that. I can definitely get behind that.
Have you
Somebody
figured out?
Open Urza.
I was going to say, have you figured out how this works at the AskUrza.com?
Well, yeah, once it was opened in the room, and it was, I didn't open it, but once somebody opened Urza and then you do that, I guess, so all of, for those of you who don't know, if you plus one on Urza, you go to the website and you hit the plus one, and it's any plus one ability of any planeswalker.
It's any plus ability of any planeswalker in existence.
Correct. Any plus ability of any planeswalker, and then the minus is any minus ability of any planeswalker, and then the ultimate is any ultimate ability of any planeswalker.
Yeah, I was tapping on that earlier tonight, and I got the Nicol Bolas ultimate back to back with the Ugin ultimate, and I was oh, that seems really broken.
Yeah, that seems really broken. And so those of you who are out there trying to build an Urza's deck, the Headmaster deck, as your commander, Godspeed to you, and I hope you can really go off on people, because that just seems ridiculous.
Very cool. I think this is going to be something that is looked back upon as fun. I don't know if this really gives them a gateway to do this with a black-bordered card as far as asking the website. I think it's too open to abuse, shall we say, or did you have a different feeling?
No. It's definitely too open to abuse. It's too kitschy, and then you would get into some kind of bannings and things because, you know, anytime you have to involve electronic devices in the middle of a Magic game, you know, I think that just opens up way too much ridiculous gameplay. So you'd have to, like, restrict, ban something from a certain format again, and I don't think that's the headache Wizards want at the time. But in an unstable environment, I think it's so perfect and provides the flavor that goes really, really well with the rest of the set.
I'm sorry. I just decided before we let him go, we would ultimate Urza, and this is the perfect ultimate for an episode of Byhards. I'm sure you'll be able to nail whose ultimate this is. Flip 5 coins. Take an extra turn after this one for each coin that comes up heads. Could there be a more perfect ultimate for this episode of Byhards?
If only Raul Zarek would cost one less, he'd be in my tiny leader's deck.
Well, if Raul Zarek cost one less, he might have had to been banned. But this, you know, we don't have to go that deep into whether Raul Zarek, you know, should have been this or should have been that. Suffice to say, I don't think he showed up on last year's holiday episode of our 50 greatest planeswalkers. I don't think he made my list.
He did not make my list, but it was one of those things I had to kind of prevent my hand from choosing him just because mm-hmm. of the soft place in my heart I have for the Is It colors. And at the same time, I'm like, yeah, it's just not that good.
So who did you have in the Galesburg Shark Tank Christmas party drawing, and what did you get?
Well, this also has a story behind it, and this is that is unfinished, to answer your question from earlier. I did have David Nash, whose nickname is the Goose of the Geese. Where, pray tell, did he get the nickname Goose of the Geese? Well, I'll tell you. Dave works at the BNSF Railroad, excuse me, and some co-workers of his one day were discussing the plurality of the word goose. And if you have a lot of feathers of said animal, is it the goose's feathers or is it the geese's feather? Oh, it can't be the geese's feathers. That just seems weird. So Dave, knowing that I taught and that I was in English, etc., was frantically trying to Facebook message me, I think while I was at school one day, which I just don't check my phone when I'm there. And so I opened my phone at the next opportune moment to this litany of messages. Tibbetts, you have to answer my question. Is it goose? Is it geese? What's the plural of geese? Is there a plural possessive of geese? All these questions. I'm like, who is this? What is going on here? So I finally texted him back and said, yes, you're right. It's the geese's feathers, if you're talking about many geese and their feathers. So Michael Bergman, one of the other Shark Tank members who kind of manages the group, changes our little monikers on the Shark Tank site. And so he changed it to Dave Goose of the Geese Nash, and that is now his nickname. So I, being very astute, basically decided to do a Goose of the Geese themed gift. So the first order of business was to order the Goose of St. Traft sleeves from the Creature Collection at Star City Games, mm-hmm. which went very, very well, and he really, really appreciated those. The second one was to employ the artistic skills of my 10, soon-to-be 11-year-old daughter, Clara, to fashion a goose's head and goose wings, which I then glued onto a 930-count long box to kind of give it that gooseneck shape.
You've got to get us a picture of this so that we can put it up on the Patreon page.
Yeah, if he still has it, I will. I don't think I even took a picture of it before I gave it to him.
Oh,
my bad. But if he's got it, yeah, I will definitely do that. Inside said box, I had just taped some sleeves that contained some foil. Let's see, what was it? It was a foil Japanese dismember. And then there was a foil alternate art Black Sun Zenith, I think Korean or something. He just likes those, you know, for the commander decks. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of the one-offs and things. And then I got him the Temple of Mystery Clash Pack art, which is beautiful, by the way, just absolutely beautiful. Taped those in there and gave that to him. Now, the gift de resistance is not actually here yet. I ran into the Etsy wall, as I call it, which was, and it's still not here, and it will be delivered sometimes shortly. I had logged on to Etsy because they have such great stuff on there, especially for Magic the Gathering things. And there is a person in the general region who does custom boxes. They take the hard plastic cases, not like the cardboard ones, but the hard plastic cases. They paint whatever you want on them. Then they clear coat it with a lacquer, and it becomes your, you know, deck box. So I had them do a goose-themed plastic, you know, hard plastic deck box. So that is coming to Dave Goose of the Geese Nash as we speak. So I think it was a pretty fitting gift. Overall, all the gifts were great. They really were. People put a lot of thought and effort into it. So I am the proud owner now of a wooden deck box, not like the Wormwood deck box that I have, but this is one of those laser kind of carved deck boxes that's got the little magnets on the top. And mm-hmm. It was inscribed Brian Nash Smasher Tibbetts, which is my Shark Tank moniker at the time, just because I'm the only one who can seem to beat Dave on a regular basis. So this was given to me by Mike Fraser, who I went to Indianapolis with a couple years ago. And in addition to that, he loaded up the beautiful wooden deck box with an alternate art Cinderglade and then about 10 of the Rebecca Guay lands, the foil art lands from the treasure pack. So I got off like a bandit, I feel.
Oh, yeah, those are great gifts. By the way, was that the trip that, Mike, was he in the Cat Pee House in Indy? Was that that trip?
Yep, sure was. The one that I left about 30 seconds.
If you don't know that story, go back, find that episode of Tryhards from when we were at Indy last year, and that's a great story. Brian's not going to tell it again right here. You remember, universe discontinuity here on Byhards, so we don't have to dip into anything from Tryhards. I'm glad you had a great time. I wish that more groups would approach Magic the way that, your community does, not just centered around your LGS, but taking it that one step further and taking some organizational tasks to themselves and, having fun with it. It sounds like it really was magical Christmas land for you guys.
Absolutely.
Well, what wasn't magical Christmas land was the fact that Modern was the order of the weekend. Team Madrid, that was the GP. 625 teams showed up in Madrid for Team Unified Modern. Spain's Rodrigo Torres, you know him if you watch the VSL, he's a regular on the Vintage Super League, teamed up with Cristiano Ortiz Rus and Adrian Romero Cano, and they defeated 2-1 Luis Salvado, Pedro Diego, and Francisco Cifuentes. It was Titan Shift, Storm, and Collected Company for the winning team. Elves, Lantern Control, and Titan Breach for the losing team. This is the same construction rules that we had talked about with the World Cup, in that you have to, if one team member is playing a card, you can't split it 3-1 or 2-2. It's they get the copies and then nobody else can use it. So in a format that is as Fetchland Shockland based as Modern, you're really more constricted by having to share mana bases than any of the linchpin cards in decks. You can find decks that don't revolve around the same linchpin cards if you can find a way to split up those lands. So that was the interesting thing to me on what deck choices were made by teams over the weekend. In Oklahoma City, it was GP OKC. Modern was the order of the day there as well. 1,415 turned out to sling the Modern cards. And if you weren't doing something unfair, well, you got left in the dust. Larry Lee on Scapeshift defeated Adam Pinon on Scapeshift 2-1. Other top eight decks, two times Mono Green Tron, one Black Green Tron, Dredge, Jeskai Breach, as they seem to be really adopting the sneak and show mentality of Legacy into these black or into these red blue decks in Modern. And then the one that really caught my eye, and I've never thought that this deck was good before, Brian, but Living End, the upgrades that it got with Horror of the Unbroken Lands and Desert Saradon and Amonkhet really give it quite the suite of impressive creatures when you cast a Living End now. And the new technology seems to be Archfiend of Ifnir. Yes, whenever you cycle or discard a card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponent controls. It's sort of just this, I hate it when people use the phrase on a stick, so I'll say on legs. It's this sort of Black Sun Zenith on legs. With the addition of Archfiend of Ifnir, I'm kind of thinking about maybe having a, you know, one night stand with Living End.
Is this a deck you can go one night stand with, though? I feel like this is that person that has that reputation of, ooh, don't get involved with that. You're going to go down that avenue and we'll see you in 6 months. And you might not be any better for it.
That's fine. I don't think the deck is going to be that hard to put together financially. All the cycling cards,
yeah,
the creatures
that's true.
What's Street Wraith is probably your most expensive card that's a creature in the deck. You need a couple of the uncommon Cascade cards. Those aren't a ton. You can put the mana base together probably a couple different ways. So this seems like it might be one of those, like, I want to break from my X deck. I've got Living End sitting here.
And that is kind of one of those things that I was, you can toy around with and see if it's something you would want to play. Mm-hmm. Because Living End, this is not a deck kind of like a Delver deck or, you know, a Remnap red deck that you can just kind of pick up and say, oh, I get this. I'm a Magic player. I know how this works. Living End, Manalist Dredge, Storm, the blue-red gifts in Gift Storm in Modern, those are decks you actually have to have reps with. And so I feel like the Living End deck is one of those. So yeah, I think this would be actually a really, really fun thing to kind of adopt. I'm all for you getting behind this. You know, maybe Sean's going to become the Modern guy on Tryhards.
No. We got a long way before that actually happens. But it was interesting to me in watching what decks were bubbling to the top. Jeskai has adopted the Breach technology. Some of the Storm decks that are blue-red in the format have been untouchable at times, it seems, when they get on certain draws. And then you have this sort of blue-red or blue-red-white version of the Breach deck rolling around that's borrowing play style patterns from Sneak and Show in Legacy. Is Modern now, Brian, just a fully unfair format? Because the old axiom is, do you want to play an unfair deck or do you want to play a fair deck? So it seems to me that Modern, the pendulum has swung to where it's an entirely unfair deck format, so to speak.
It seems that way, or at least it's leaning in that direction. I think last week on the show, I was asked the question, what would I run if I was going to OKC? And I said Eldrazi Tron. So I feel like I got the Tron portion of it right, but I haven't been playing enough to be up on the tech where black green Tron or even the mono green Tron seems to be the deck of choice with the big mana. But I was actually pretty shocked at how much the unfair decks kind of ruled the day here. If you look at the 9 through 32 deck list, you can see a couple of the decks that we've seen kicking around for the last 6 to 8 months. But all of these, really, the big decks won the day. And as you said, if you weren't doing something broken or silly, you were kind of on the outside looking in saying, well, I thought my Death Shadow deck was going to be pretty good, but I guess not.
Yeah, when you look at it, Scapeshift, Breach, Dredge, I'm going to put Tron in this category, and Living End, they're all combo decks.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all combo. They're all combo decks, or they're shutting down decks from very, very early on, and just, you know, going way over the top and doing something silly. So it's weird. I don't know if I ever thought that Modern would get to this point. And if this is something that was just kind of a, you know, holiday type thing, but hell, enough people showed up for this.
1400. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like this is the small sample size that we, you know, sometimes qualify our SCG classics as. This is a huge group of people. And Seth Manfield was in the top eight. It's not like it was devoid of, you know, some of the top pros either. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if Modern continues on in this direction, and then how is it going to correct itself?
Well, and I understand that in that large of a tournament, to get down to eight, you have tiebreaker issues and, you know, somebody missed by an eyelash. So the top eight isn't the end-all be-all for what was good in the end on the weekend. But the fact that there are zero Death Shadow archetypes was the first thing that jumped out at me.
Yeah. The zero Death Shadow archetypes. I was even looking down the list, and I think it was only, gosh, in the 20s that there was a Death Shadow list that I could possibly find. It might have been a little bit lower than that. But, you know, then you get 9 to 32. There's a Lantern Control deck in there. Finally, the Eldrazi Tron kind of makes a show. Here's where the Storm decks were. They just got kind of beat out of the top eight, I think, because they just weren't good enough to beat those big mana decks. And then, Sean, I don't know if you saw, in 16th place, there was a white-black Smallpox. Did you take a look at that list at all?
Oh, Hurley sent me that list and wanted me to fix its mana base. Like, I wasn't doing anything this weekend. He's like, hey, could you sit down and fix this deck's mana base? Because I want to play it on Magic Online. And I told him I'd take a look at it, and I was so busy this weekend, I honestly still haven't taken a look at it. But sure. I think my schedule is going to calm down over the next few days ahead of this weekend. And hopefully I'll get to kind of sit down, dissect it, makes a suggestion or two, because it's a powerful deck that's attacking the metagame in the old asymmetrical warfare style. So I think if you can get some issues ironed out, it could be a great way to go.
Yeah. No, it looks very solid, you know, right on the back of Smuggler's Copter and Bloodghast, 4 Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, 4 Lilianas. It seems really, really good, and something that, you know, you would kind of put on just like a...
Gravitate toward, yeah. It does,
just like
honestly.
That favorite pair of jeans you got, you know, from
okay,
playing
well,
Legacy
let me ask
Box,
you this so. Then, as we're kind of talking about Modern a little bit here. with the Planeswalker legendary type change, is 4 still the right amount of Liliana's, or is 6 going to become the default setting? Because I would make an argument that while in my mind, Vale is still better than Last Hope, both in a vacuum and in the metagame, that 2 Last Hope is going to be better than almost any 2 other cards you could put in that slot. So if you're going to play a deck with black that's interested in Planeswalkers, is 4 Vale, 2 Last Hope going to become the new sort of template?
I think the only reason you would want to put Last Hope in there is win condition. If the format moves into this kind of large creature combo unfair deck archetypes, I don't think Last Hope is all that much better than some other options you could put in there. If we're still looking at a Death Shadow world, at a world like Elves and a world like Humans where there's a lot of small creatures running around, I absolutely think Last Hope is, you've got to have at least 2 of there. And the new rule just makes it that much easier to kind of mess with your sideboard and do some version of both, either main deck or main and side.
Oh, if you get them like both going side by side, that's the dirty dream right there.
That's when, if you don't take a picture, it didn't happen.
Oh, I could not agree more. And I'm not a picture it didn't happen guy. That's the tournament news from this weekend. Since this is an episode of Byhards, there are no restrictions in the talk section. We're not going to have In the Elevator. We're not going to have 3 minutes to brew. We might talk about something we did to get better at Magic this week. So it's just a chance for us to have a conversation, and we'd love for you to chime in if you're listening via the Patreon page on what we get up to. So, Brian, you got a topic you want to get us started with?
I want to talk about Unstable, because the only thing that I had heard going into the weekend where I hadn't, you know, really even sat down to look at a whole lot of Unstable cards was how much fun the format was. And I know some people who had drafted the night before the little Christmas extravaganza that we had, and I was really looking forward to it, but I didn't really want to have my opinions tainted by someone's positive experience in case I thought it was not a lot of fun. But I gotta say, I agree wholeheartedly. I haven't been in a room where people were laughing and checking out other people's games and matches and their hands and ridiculous plays more so in a very, very long time. And it was really, really a ton of fun. So that fun aspect of Magic, Sean, I think we get really, really caught up in the competitive aspect. And I know, you know, we like to have a lot of fun when we play. That's kind of what some of those casual formats are, you know, especially Commander. If you're not a competitive Commander player, you want to sit down with your buddies and, you know, just
that
sling
phrase
cards.
Makes my skin crawl. Competitive Commander.
Yes, exactly. I'm with you there. I'm like, what is that? I don't even understand that. People who sign up for those 4-person pods at you know, Star City Games Opens and GPs, I just kind of look over there. I'm like, whatever. If you're having fun, no worries.
Yeah, agreed.
But the Unstable draft was so fun, and I have to say, so uncomfortable. I had no idea what you're drafting. I mean, you sit down and you're looking at these cards, you're like, I have no idea if this is good. This could be awesome, or this could be terrible. So I felt like I was kind of limited to what I was drafting. I kind of wanted to draft some ridiculous things just to be able to play them. Some people were drafting stuff before me. It didn't get to me, but I was drafting a lot of cards that I thought would go well in just a regular deck, and it worked out that way. It was a fun deck to play, and I got to do some kind of silly shenanigans, but most of the stuff happened to me. I didn't get to do anything ridiculous to someone. I think the best play that I saw, and it happened twice, was I got entirely normal armchaired. and if nothing else, I think if you get entirely normal armchaired and your reaction is to laugh from like the deepest part of your belly about it, that's when you know that Wizards did a good thing with that card, because it's just hilarious. Because the entire talk is, how'd you get that onto the battlefield without me seeing it? And it's like, oh, well, remember when somebody tapped you on the shoulder and asked you, do you like squirrels? Because that's part of another card. And you turn to answer their question. Yeah, I slid it under that swamp. It's like, okay. And so then when I saw it happen to Hoffman in another game, and he got entirely normal armchaired, he was actually swinging in for the win. And Nash was like, yeah, I think I'm going to have to sack this and destroy that. Pretty great. Pretty great stuff. People having to hold cards above the table because that's what the flavor text does. People dying because they touched their card that had the hazmat suit on it. I mean, ridiculous things. And it just a lot of fun. So I don't know. You haven't been able to play Unstable yet, Sean. Are you in any way, shape, or form interested? Have I convinced you at all that you should try to draft this?
Hurley had never had an unexperience before this, and I know he really had a lot of fun. And it's something that if I get the opportunity to do it, I'll do it. I'm not going to go out of my way to be the one who organizes the draft. But if I show up and play, I'll do it once. To me, I mean, these are fine sets to experience. I'd rather do, I think, what you did, which is get friends together and do it, because that seems to be the optimal way to enjoy this. That also, to me, seems to be the optimal way to play the conspiracy sets when they come out.
Yes, and agreed 100%.
I like to play them once, and then, okay, that's fine. You know?
Well, here, this is interesting, because that is how I felt about Iconic Masters, as we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, was, yeah, it was fine, but again, you know, I don't think the Magic community, or Wizards for that matter, knows who Iconic Masters was made for. I think Unstable has a very, very clear demographic. People who want to get together and have fun playing Magic. And that's exactly what this set is designed to do. I would gladly, gladly pay for a booster box of this to just have it sit around until you get that moment when it's like, oh, hey, we got seven other people over here. Hey, you guys want to draft Unstable? Sure. Sit down. Okay, everybody throw in $10, cover my costs. Let's do this.
Right. So does that make this Magic's version of like Cards Against Humanity?
You know, in a way, it is. And I know not everybody likes it. I've seen some people who are like, oh, Unhinged was so much better than this. It's just too complicated, etc. For the contraptions alone, I would draft this set again. That part of Unstable was so much fun to play, was figuring out the contraptions. And I thought it was going to be really, really complicated. It's so intuitive. It's very fun. But yeah, I mean, 50-50, if I was ever given the choice of Cards Against Humanity or drafting Unstable, I'd probably choose Cards Against Humanity all the time, just because that game is ridiculously fun. But in the right group, I think Unstable, in a Magic-centered group, it really is kind of like that. You're just having fun, and you're laughing, and you probably have a beverage in your hand or four. And that's really what it's all about. I'm not into, you know, drafting this just for the lands. We did have a foil island opened out of our box. It's beautiful. And I will say this, the full art tokens are absolutely gorgeous. And for anybody out there who wants to give me all of the full art elemental tokens out of the set, just send them my way. I'm glad to receive them.
You've become like the show beggar, begging for the Rebecca Waylands, begging for the full art tokens.
You know what? I may start my own podcast called Brian's Begging. That's going to be my winter project.
All right. So anyway, I don't know if we'll link that on the Patreon side or not. Probably not.
What's been on your mind in the Magic world lately? I know your new gig has got you kind of going 19 different directions, and you haven't had time to focus on things. So what are you looking forward to, first of all, when you get to get back into the game a little bit more?
Well, we'll get into that in just a second, but you know what popped up into my mind when you were talking about how much you liked Unstable as the sort of capstone on the Uncycle is, if you've got an idea for a card, like you were talking about when you said holding four beverages, I could see that being a silver bordered like dexterity card, like play the game with four beverages or something, which means you may have what it takes, because Wizards just announced that the Great Designer Search 3 is coming in 2018. So maybe you've just designed an uncard, Brian, and you should throw your hat into the ring. Is this something that appeals to you? Because there was a time that we talked about the Great Designer Search. We had ideas for cards. None of us actually entered into it, but it was something that was sort of circulating in our galaxy and our mind. It's too far gone for me. I've got too many things going on now. I'm not the target for that. I don't have the background in game design that they're looking for now. But does that opportunity get your sort of magic juices flowing? Because if you're somebody who likes to be a deck designer, I think that's just, you know, one easy slide step to the left to start designing actual cards.
I would absolutely kill for a job like that. The issue is I know my limitations and I know how creative I can be. And I know where I get just hemmed in by my own paranoias about mana bases and paranoias about curve and everything else like that. So would I love the opportunity? Oh my God, absolutely. I think you and I come from the same spot in our hearts for this game, which is we'd love to just kind of build decks and see what works and not just take what's out there and adopt it, even though that's kind of what I felt like I've been doing for the last couple years just because of time, like you said. But given free rein, I would love to just play around with things and see what would happen. So no, that's something that appeals to me a lot. So yeah, I'm going to be so busy this winter with so many things coming up on my plate. But as I saw this post the other night that said, well, with finals coming up, I should probably be really responsible and study really hard. Anyone else logging on for the MTG championships? So it was one of those kind of things. Like, I'm still going to find time to have some, you know, to have some cardboard moments, as it were. I can't just abandon all of this in the basement here. It's just, it's too fun and there's too much invested. So yeah, I would love to see what that's about. I've got to look a little deeper into that.
I could just see the first pitch that you make. Why Ral Zarek should have cost one less.
That would be so great.
By Brian Tibbetts.
I got to play, are you familiar with the card Stitch in Time?
Yes.
Okay, so I played Stitch in Time out of my Tiny Leaders deck, and it came up tails, I'd called heads, so I didn't get to take the extra turn. But that's the kind of card that I absolutely love, where there's some chance involved, you've got to, you know, build. It's got to fit a certain archetype and things like that. So yeah, that's the kind of card that I'm kind of like, this is fun. And everybody was like, yeah, I haven't seen that card in forever. I'm like, yeah, well, they just don't print cards like this anymore. So
basically, is it plus one? Flip a coin. If you win the flip, take an extra turn. Time walk. If you don't, then you get nothing.
If you don't, you get nothing. You're out the mana, which, you know, you've got to pick your moments, obviously. But it could have gone really, really well for me. As it was, yeah. It didn't.
And this is the way Brian would play Stitch in Time. Stitch in Time, flip, win, flip, Snapcaster Mage, Stitch in Time, flip, win, flip.
If only that could have happened, I would have been so happy.
I take two turns after this one? Okay, yes. Time stretch. You can go for it. It's all good. I'm sure right now people feel like their time is elasticizing the wrong way during this episode of ByHards. This is something that I wanted to get into last week, but we didn't have the opportunity on the show. And next week is the TryHards holiday episode. So it's going to be a little lighter, even though it's going to be an official TryHard episode. And this topic could be a little divisive. So let's just kind of knock it around here for a minute. My question is this. You watched the World Magic Cup. I watched the World Magic Cup as much as we could. Should coverage of major Magic tournaments, World Magic Cup, World Championships, Pro Tours, should they only be the sort of fawning and upbeat coverage that we get now? Or would Magic benefit from a more sports-style coverage to where we're free to critique, and critique not to be mean, but to point out deficiencies and to second-guess, and not in a mean-spirited way, but in a way to where this becomes a broader topic of conversation? Would you think that would help Magic grow? Because I think that there is a limit to the constant fawning, upbeat, it's the in-house coverage, so this is basically just a weekend-long commercial for the game. There's a limit to that style of coverage. And I'm wondering that if the game is going to continue to grow now in its 25th year coming up, if it's time to shift to the next gear.
So are you thinking of calling out bad plays at a greater rate when you see them?
Well, no, not
holding people
not
accountable
just
for their deck choices.
Think things like that. You know, I mean, think of the way that your favorite sports team is covered by whatever website, newspaper, blog, whatever it is you read. The day after a loss, I'm just going to take baseball for an example. there is a breakdown of whether or not the manager went to the bullpen for the right reliever in the right situation, what the percentages were. And there, it's not mean-spirited, but there is an analytic critique. We now have the analytics in Magic to do much more numbers-based analysis. Well, I mean, Frank Karsten is the one who's really pushed this forward.
Yeah,
and I think
really
about him when I think of these styles of things, but to second guess, not in a mean, oh, you did it wrong way, but in a, hey, this is the better percentage play, and stop worrying about people's feelings so much. I mean, I think you have to, when you enter a tournament, open yourself up to the fact that we all have to sign the coverage waiver. It never comes up for us, but we have to sign it anyway. Once you're on camera, you are now part of the conversation about that tournament. Good, bad, win, lose, punt, pull victory from the jaws of defeat, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And when I cover sports, I have this kind of sliding scale that I use. And this is the cleanest and easiest break to understand it. If you're not playing for compensation, then I'm very kid gloves friendly. And what I mean by that is starting out with my career covering, you know, high school sports, things like that. Those are kids who are playing because they want to play. Once you move to a level at which you are accepting compensation for performance, it opens you up to a wider range of critiques. When you are in a pro tour, World Magic Cup, you're in day two of a GP, I feel like it's the Magic equivalent of moving to the collegiate or beyond level in sports, where you now have a reward for performance on the line. And so it would open people up to a wider critique of how they're playing the game, what they're doing, the decisions that they make. Just something as basic as, did X player bring the wrong deck for this tournament? I mean, it's something you see discussed on social media by the player sometime, but should Matt, and I'm not thinking advancing all the way to the way they cover soccer in England, all right? That's vitriol,
please no. Yes.
And, you know, all of that. So we don't need to go all the way there. But would we benefit from something closer to ESPN's coverage, let's just say, of NFL football or Major League Baseball?
Oh, I think you're absolutely onto something there. As you were saying that, what popped into my mind was Magic's treatment of the match between PBDDR and Yamwing Chung in the Pro Tour, two Pro Tours ago. Was it Pro Tour Hour of Devastation?
That was the Hazoret match.
Yes, the Hazoret match where Yamwing Chung, there's no bones about it, made a blunder. I mean, huge blunder in the semis that cost him the match. I think that's pretty clear. And everybody kept saying, heartbreaking, heartbreaking. Oh, how, you know, tough. This is a hard game and people make mistakes. Was that handled properly? I felt like, you know, we were revisiting that moment, but how we were visiting that moment is to your question, Sean. And that was fascinating to me because, yeah, we could have gone a little bit tougher. Like, yeah, we get it. It's a tough game, but come on, in that moment, how do you make that mistake? You know, it could have gone that way. Mm-hmm. Does that benefit the game, or is that just kind of piling on and we shouldn't do that very often?
Well, I think you have to take each one case by case. Yamwing Chung came out and has owned it. I mean, he's owned it to the point of Christian Laettner, who now famously poses for pictures with people stomping on his chest. You know, for the famous Christian Laettner stomp from the 90s.
Yes.
If you think that coverage going back to antiquity has only been positive, I'll point you toward baseball because it's the thing I'm most familiar with. Google Merkel's boner the next time you get a chance. Don't worry, it's not porn. It has to do with Major League Baseball and the way that a simple mistake cost a team a huge stage game. I mean, you think about all of those things that have been sort of relived in infamy. Would Magic benefit from adding some of that to the lore? Because it seems like if you go way back, you know, to the long days, to the days when there were black hats in Magic, those days have been relegated to myth and antiquity. And if you're talking about cheating in the game, then that's absolutely where it belongs, and I would never espouse that. But if you're talking about being supportive to the point that you don't hold people accountable for their mistakes, there's a level at which you actually now inhibit growth.
Yep. Yeah, no, I can get behind that. I think that's a fascinating view. Who in the Magic community, especially in the broadcast community, is up to that challenge? Right now, who springs to mind is Patrick Sullivan. Patrick and Cedric sometimes don't seem to pull their punches when, you know, they see a misplay. They'll sometimes call it out. And that's what's beautiful about listening to them, is they call it out and then they move on. Just like if they call out a great play and then they move on. It's kind of an objective coverage like that. But to maybe call out those plays, analyze why they did it the wrong way or what they could have been thinking about, and, you know, how to make it better, I think might be a fascinating level to this that, you know, people haven't really thought about before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, is it hindering Magic's growth? I don't know. I think that's a tougher question. People want to tune into the game they love to see people play, not to maybe snark on people for making bad mistakes, etc. You want to see your game played at the highest level. At the same time, if it's not being played at the highest level, there's nothing wrong with calling people out for that if we know objectively that there's a better way to do things.
Right, and I'm not advocating piling on or making fun of or belittling. I'm talking about this in a manner befitting a critique, an educated critique of what we're seeing or mistakes that were made, with the idea of learning from it, improving not only that player, but people who are watching, sort of being able to improve themselves and remember that. And I'm not looking to install, you know, one person, as I said, is the head of that, but rather maybe just a coverage-wide, an industry-wide attitude adopted of, it's okay to say they made a mistake on that play and it cost them.
Yep. Yep. No, I'd be totally for that, to be honest with you, just because that's the way that the community is going to get better and learn, more so than just, like you said, having this, you know, weekend long commercial for the game. They've got to understand that there are rights and wrong ways to do things. And that's part of it.
Okay. Second prong on this, just going back to the World Magic Cup, because this was when these questions popped up and I wrote them on my little notebook here that I keep for the show. Do you like the way that national teams are currently selected? Because I'm not sure that I do anymore.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. It's the national champ and then the two top pro point getters. So you look at this, and to me, if the Magic World Cup is an exhibition of Magic featuring countries from around the world, then do whatever you want. But right now, we crown the winning team the world champions, right? They win the World Magic Cup. That's separate from the world championship with individual players, right? They are the reigning World Cup champions.
Yeah.
You have to
you're right.
To me, you have to have some way that is both inclusive and selective that should be, in my mind, in some way, it should almost be left up to each individual participating country. And I know WotC gets to hold the reins exclusively on this and dictate from the pulpit. And for consistency, that's all right. But when you look at countries with such a variance of player population, geography, and a number of other things, it just seems that this is a one-size-fits-all solution that WotC has come up and dictated that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that 100%. There seems to be a lot of good players who just get kind of left out, you know, on the outside looking in, just because they didn't end up with all the pro points. But boy, are they running hot right now. And I'm sure a lot of people would be like, whoa, that'd be great to have them on the team. Too bad math dictates that they're not. So how do you go about doing that, though? That's the thing. You want to make it as objective and transparent as possible. Or are you advocating for something like we get to choose who we want to be. I'm the team captain. I get to choose who goes on the team.
Well, I would almost be okay with that if it wasn't decided, and this is going to sound so exclusive. I mean, you accuse me of being the man in the pre-show tonight. If it wasn't left up to chance in a tournament, to me, it could be decided on pro points or something like that. That if you're the leading pro point accumulator for that window of time in your country, you're the captain, you get three picks. You're two teammates and an alternate in case one can't go, illness, you know, whatever it is. And the alternate would know that they're picked as the alternate. So it seems to me that there's a better way to come up with the best teams for each country, because at this point, it's moved from being just this colorful and eclectic showcase of magic to there being a lot on the line.
Oh, yeah, I can't disagree with you there. I think that's absolutely what it is. The stakes, it seems like, at those levels are so high all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so Magic constantly has to worry about who they're putting on camera and who they are espousing as the best, because you want to have that product in the hands of the best players. And if it becomes not about having it in the hands of the best players, then, you know, does that tarnish the reputation of the game a little bit? I don't know.
Offshoot thought from this real quickly. We're going to take a railroad spur, and then I'm going to come back to one thing. So Magic has all of these different showcases throughout the year, from the World Magic Cup to the World Championships to the Pro Tour. What about, and I think this would be a great way to push the game forward, although I don't know if Wizards' marketing budget really wants to cough up for this. What about a Hall of Fame showdown to where it's only Hall of Famers in the field?
Oh, wow.
I think that would be cool.
You're getting into our age people now, Sean. That's dangerous.
I think that would be cool. I think that would be a big watch. You know, you could bring the coverage team out and call it they just have it once a year. The 2018 Hall of Fame tournament, to where every player in there is a Hall of Famer. Not all of them stay with the game and are on top of their game. I fully understand that. But the draw, the marketing, I think the sponsorship opportunities are there if you have a Hall of Fame tournament. It was something that occurred to me this week, and I was like, I got to run that by the guys on Monday.
Oh, yeah. No, if there was kind of like what SCG does with the old
Players' Championship.
Players' Championship, right. So you've got basically a small, isolated, very, very intense field mm-hmm. of the best players, and just kind of do the round robin of all formats. You know, you got to throw some limited in there. You got to throw some standard, some legacy, some modern. That would be a huge draw. I would love to see that. That would be so much fun. But you couldn't do that on a national kind of basis.
Oh,
correct?
No. Two separate thoughts. Two separate correct. Thoughts there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That idea. I love that strain that you're going on that. That seems, I would definitely tune in to watch that. And my reasoning to tell everybody else in the world, you know, that I'm off the grid that weekend is I get to watch old men playing Magic.
Maybe we could even make one of the formats old school. You know, that,
oh,
yeah. You never know. Oh, my God. The price on Juzwams would go absolutely nuts if that actually happened. All right, that's just a couple of things that we're rolling them out on my mind. You got anything else you want to get to?
No, man. I mean, it's kind of exhausting not playing Magic for so long. You kind of forget what the grind is. So getting to play three formats in one night was actually just a ball. And I was really, really happy that I had spent the time to put together a commander deck, a tiny leaders deck, just to kind of grab out of the bag and not be that guy who's like, oh, I need to borrow one. Not that that's a bad thing, because I've done that in my life as well. And then, of course, the draft Unstable was fantastic. So, no, I'm kind of suffering a little Magic fatigue, but I just kind of want to jump back in and, you know, play more cardboard.
Cardboard. The cardboard that you played over the weekend, this topic has surfaced once again in the community. Was it quality cardboard or was it substandard cardboard? Because I've noticed this circulating on a couple popular YouTube channels that there is actually a concern now, according to a couple of reports at Wizards, that they know the quality of the cardboard the cards have been printed on hasn't been that great, and they're hoping to move back. And I got to thinking about that. I thought, you know, I've got cards from Ixalan that have practically warped into taco shells, and I've got cards from Tempest that still look like they just came off an iron. So, you know, there's something different there, and I don't know. I always think I can feel it, but then am I fooling myself? Am I buying into a popular trend? I don't know. This is something that's come up. Do I think the card quality, the physical card quality, has decreased over time? Yes, I do. Where it's happened or what, I don't know enough about cardboard and paper meshes or any of that.
Sure. The quality of the cards has probably decreased, I would say, to make it more durable. I feel like, you know, the cardboard from the past, I I would equate more closer to the cardboard that Amazon ships me every couple of weeks. You know, that was the alpha and the beta, was that really thick kind of cardboard that gets smashed up on the edges. I feel like this cardboard nowadays is just kind of impermeable to that. It tends to scratch and get dinged and dented, but it doesn't smush, if that's a verb.
Right.
I don't know. So yeah, I think it's definitely a different quality, and I'm sure Wizards is going to be changing that, just the way the mint changes the paper that they use for, you know, printing money. But I'm kind of glad we have more durable cardboard, just because I get to touch it a lot more.
I can see the logo. I can see the logo now. Now smush proof.
Now, how great. Magic, the smush proof card game, or just play online.
Yeah, your digital objects better be smush proof at the bare minimum.
Oh, God.
Buy hards. That's what this is, a chance to let our collective hair down and just roll with it. We do them every once in a while. Try hards. The Christmas episode returns next week. We'll catch you then. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for sticking it out for episode 2 of Buy Hards.